So glad to have you in here with us today as I begin a new series through the book of Judges. I love the Old Testament. I mean, as a pastor, I guess I have to love the whole Bible, but I do particularly love the Old Testament. I often feel like the New Testament is telling us the things that we're called to do as Christians, but I feel like in the Old Testament, so many times we get to see people try to live a life for God, and sometimes they hit it, and sometimes they don't. And so as we go through the book of Judges, you're going to see that. You can start turning to Judges 2, so you'll be ready once we get there. I'm kind of getting excited. I would like to say I'm getting excited for summer, but I'm still waiting for spring to show up. I have always loved the Olympics. My first exposure to the Olympics was in 92 with the Dream Team. You had all these players coming, and all of a sudden, we just wiped the floor with everybody in basketball. And then 96 was probably the first time that I watched, like, a lot of the Olympics. It was down in Atlanta, and my dad has a lot of family down there. My grandmother was working for the Atlanta newspaper, so she was sending us all kinds of Olympic stuff. So I watched, and I cared. And you know what I still think of when I think of the Olympics? 96, I think of the vault and Kerry Strug. Who remembers that? Kerry Strug having to go down and do the vault and land that for the USA gold medal. If you haven't watched that, you've got to watch it. It's amazing. And so, you know, we get ready for a new Olympics coming this year to Rio. And, you know, as they do that, as the Olympics draw closer, they have the torch. And it's going to be taken all over the country of Brazil. Now, I didn't realize this, but there will be 12,000 people who will be torchbearers all across that country. And so they're going to be taking it starting in May and winding it all across. But while you may see on TV these wonderful examples of them taking the torch and they hand it off and it just looks so great, there have been some mishaps. During the last Winter Olympics, they kept trying to get one of the torches to light and it just wouldn't light. And finally, someone used a cigarette lighter on it. That just isn't glamorous at all. And they've had that happen. People have dropped it. But I actually read that at the 1948 Games, as they were taking the torch to London, they got to a stop and the runner wasn't there. And so this runner who had already been running for a ways, because now it's celebratory. You have 12,000 people. Used to not. People really wanted to show how far they could run. So the guy had already been running. Well, he had to keep on going. Well, then suddenly there was a guy sitting around going, I think I'm supposed to be somewhere today. And so he gets there. He's late. He had to jump in a car and drive to catch up to the guy. And then he took the torch and kept on going. You know, sometimes the torch doesn't always get passed so well. And today, as we talk through the book of Judges and begin this process, I want you to understand this big point for us as a first family, which is, how are you working for the future of First Baptist Church? And I can ask you that question in two ways. Number one, how are you helping to pass the torch to that next generation of leaders? And I'm not just talking about age-wise. And how are you doing in taking the torch when it's being offered to you? So as we get into the book of Judges, the entire book covers about 300 years. It covers from the end of Joshua leading the people into the promised land to the beginning of Israel now having a king with King Saul. And as we see this 300 years, you see this constant pattern through the book of Judges. You see a pattern of the people having disobedience. Because of their disobedience, there's oppression, a loss of blessing that comes into their lives. Then they repent. They say, God, we're sorry. And then they're restored. God comes in and he rescues them. And you might read this and say, you know, why are they so dumb? How can they keep making the same dumb choice? Oh, wait a minute. And then you start seeing that your life is not so dissimilar from the people we see in Scripture and go, oh, what were they thinking? Why couldn't they just get this? Why couldn't they just figure this out? And so at this point of what we're going to see in Judges chapter 2, the Jewish people have conquered Canaan. So when you're looking at the map and you see Israel, that's essentially what they've conquered at this point. And the Jewish people came in as an instrument of God's judgment. They were an instrument of God's judgment upon the people that were in Canaan. These people weren't just idol worshipers. These people were into human sacrifice. They were sacrificing their children. In fact, later on in Israel's history, there will be Jewish people who know who God is, who will sacrifice their children to these false gods. This is the kind of stuff that was going on in the land of Canaan. And the Jews were instructed to do this. Listen, I'm giving you this spot, but these people have to completely go, because otherwise they will tempt you to do the very same things that they have done. But the Jewish people decide to amend God's commandment. Let me just challenge you. If God ever tells you to do something, don't bargain with God and don't propose an amendment. You just need to do it. You just need to say, this is what God is telling me. I need to do it, because here's the amendment they propose. You know what? These people could really help us out. We're new. We got to build houses. We got to build towns. We got to take care of stuff. How about we let them be our labor force? And they thought this sounded like a good idea. But Joshua and the leadership that he has, they're serving God. And then over time, they begin to die. They begin to fall away. And now you have this next generation that comes up, and they become corrupted. One of my favorite preachers, Adrian Rogers, describes the book of Judges this way. They had a glorious conquest, a gradual compromise, and grim consequences. Let's take a look at Judges chapter 2 together, verses 6 through 10. Judges 2:6 says, when Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession of the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, the people who were serving with Joshua. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. How many of you remember Choose Your Own Adventure books? Nice. I love Choose Your Own Adventure books. I remember my first Choose Your Own Adventure book. You would read through the book and you'd get to a page and it would give you a choice. And you could choose what you wanted to do next. And you would turn to this page or that page. Well, pretty soon I started trying to figure out what's the best ending. And I would try to figure out, okay, what do I need to do so that I can have the best ending this book has to offer? In fact, I found online, if you want to cheat, there are people that have lined out all the different options through a Choose Your Own Adventure book so you can get the best possible ending. But that's not a real ending because you're not really choosing it. You're just kind of doing what someone else tells you to do. Well, at the end of the book of Joshua, right before Judges, it has a great ending. Joshua is coming into the land with the people, and he says, listen, you need to choose right now who you're going to serve. You remember the worthless fake gods your parents used to serve. And you know what worshiping fake gods in the new place we're going has done for them. So you can worship fake gods, or you can worship the God. Make your choice. And Israel overwhelmingly all together commits, yes, we want to serve the Lord. And so during Joshua's time, and even the leaders that are serving with him, everyone's just doing the things they're supposed to be doing. Joshua is being an example to them. His kind of lieutenants are being an example to the people. But then they start to go away. And over time, that commitment begins to turn to compromise. Have you found in your life that commitment is hard, but compromise is easy? Isn't compromise easy? You know, we're far enough away now from the New Year's. Some of us have forgotten some of the New Year's resolutions we made, haven't we? Oh, well, I'm going to do this when I've got time. Let me tell you what, I already know what resolutions you'll be doing next year, because you've allowed compromise to come. And you said you were going to do this. You said you're going to be that, but, well, maybe not so much. And over time, as Israel loses their spiritual leadership, we find that the people have no vision. They have no understanding of what's next for them, what they're supposed to do. Here at our church, our vision is reaching upward, reaching outward. And I consider that to be very important, because if something were to happen to me today, I believe that our church, that you, still have a model we can work with. You don't need me. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but you don't. I would like to consider myself to be a friend to you, an asset to you, But ultimately, I'm not here to accomplish things for our church. Anything good that happens at this church is to the glory of God and to the blessing of his people. That's the whole purpose. There will never be a book that Pastor Heath will write of how Heath fixed First Baptist Church. Because first of all, we have a wonderful group of people here that love each other. And that's so important. We've been seeing that through the Bible. But the work that's being done is being done because God is doing it. So this is a vision we all can take up. But it tells us that Joshua and his leaders begin to fall away and the people don't know what to do. Now listen, Joshua knew. He knew that he needed to raise up the next generation. If you read back in the book of Exodus, Moses and the people are out there in the desert. And God calls Moses to come up on the mountain to get the commandments. Did you know he didn't go up there alone? Did you know that Joshua went with him? So Joshua's there. He's seeing Moses speak to God. He sees the special relationship. So one day when Moses is gone, Joshua doesn't just have to think about what he heard. He saw it. He saw it out of Moses. But Joshua failed to pass that lesson on to the next generation. When I was in my church in college, our youth minister asked me if I would help out with the youth. And I thought, yeah, that sounds kind of fun. Why not? I got lots of energy. I got lots of time. Sure. I didn't realize, though, why he was doing it. See, I thought he just needed someone to help. But he already saw down the line that there was going to be a new opportunity for ministry for him within that church. He wouldn't be the youth pastor anymore, and he became our associate pastor and started overseeing our education. And so when he moved into that position, and they said, well, we have a recommendation from the former youth pastor for our next youth pastor, and it's you. And I thought, oh, that sneaky guy. The whole time, he was trying to get me ready to take his job, and I never even realized it. So when God began calling me to an opportunity to be a lead pastor in my last church, those last 16 months, I recognized this. If God's going to call me out of this church, who have I built up that's going to step in when I'm gone? I recognized that I could go somewhere else and leave the church completely in the lurch. And so I started praying. I started saying, God, show me who these people should be. And when I announced to our church back in Pennsylvania, listen, God is calling us to this new place, Matchesney Park. I don't know how to spell it, but we're moving there. And so I was telling everyone we're going. I had all these calls. Some of you are just now getting it. I had all these calls from people. I had a call from this guy. And he said, you know what, Heath, you're getting ready to go. And I feel like God is calling me to work with the youth. Well, I already knew that. That call wasn't shocking. And then I had a call from another guy. He said, you know, you're getting ready to leave, and I feel like I'm supposed to start leading our men's group now. And I said, I know, that's not shocking. In fact, all these areas, I was leading the music at our church, and God had even brought someone in who was highly talented and was ready to start leading, and that person stepped up. So I saw it was just a matter of, was I preparing people for their opportunity, for their part? And listen, that kind of passing the torch never happens accidentally. There won't be someone running across Brazil this summer. I'm tired. Who wants a torch? That's not going to happen. They have people along the route who are going to be prepared to help take up the torch and move that along. And so as I was reading through Judges and praying about what does this mean for our church, listen, I don't have a book that says, in this month, you will preach to your church about Judges. I mean, I really sit and I think, what should I preach? What should I teach? And there's a question that kept coming up in my mind, a question that every ministry leader in our church needs to be asking themselves, even if they think they're going to be in that role for 10 more years. Who's next? Every person in our church that is in some way serving needs to be asking the question, who's next? It doesn't mean we're trying to get rid of you. It means we're trying to be ready. I appreciate Beth's leadership in our Sunday school classes. And we've been saying to our Sunday school teachers, each class doesn't just need a teacher. They need an apprentice teacher, someone that can have some opportunities to learn and opportunities to teach. Because guess what? as we grow, we need more classes, more opportunities for people to come in, because you can have name tags on and you can get to know a name, but you can't necessarily get to know a person in here. That's why we offer Sunday school, so you can get to know the Bible and get to know people. So we need more people to be invested there. In our nursery area, you know what we've been sharing, that by Easter next year, if we can wait that long, that I believe God is beginning to lead us to look at two worship services. Now that's awesome and that's exciting, and we say praise God for that growth, but guess what? The kids still have to be watched. We can't have the service where the kids are watched and the service where the kids just do whatever they want, because that's not going to work. So I'm telling you, if you say, boy, I wonder if they need help back in the kids area. Yes. Yes. Well, do they need help in med? Yes. Just stop asking. Just start doing. I'm telling you, when we're talking about this next generation, how many of you who did grow up in church, not everybody here did, but how many of you grew up in church and you remember someone who made an impact on you as a kid? You remember that Sunday school teacher. Even for me, not growing up in church, but I'd go to vacation Bible school because, hey, free snacks. I mean, I would go sometimes. And I remember some of those women and men who would teach me things, who picked me up on the bus or picked me up in their car and helped me do all those things. And I sang songs like, Father Abraham, why are we singing about Abraham Lincoln? This makes no sense to me. I didn't know what was going on. That's how bad it was, okay? But I still remember those people. You start looking and thinking, I could make an impact in there. And it's not just for the next generation. Sometimes people need to be out. We need to have it for emergency, for absentee, and for the next generation, for training. We cannot allow ourselves as a church to wait for the need to arise to try to meet that need. You know what happens to churches that do that? They die. There's a reason that 9 out of every 10 churches in America are either plateaued or declining. And a big reason for it is because they never passed the torch. They never said, this is yours. This is your church as much as it's my church. This is your ministry as much as it's my ministry. This is your opportunity. And when we wait until it's too late, here's what happens. People start hanging on to a calling past their calling. And then they get worn out. I see this. I've seen this in ministry since I've been in. There are people that, because they know no one else is willing to do it, they just keep holding on. They keep holding on. And then eventually their grip slips. And that ministry falls apart. And it's not because they didn't care. It's because we didn't help them pass the torch. We didn't help them find that person that was going to come in there and learn from them. And this prevents new people from being able to invest. We just finished our discovery class this morning, had a full house. You may have seen us taking our people from discovery class on a tour this morning of the building, showing them around, showing them what doors not to touch, and just kind of showing them where things are in the church. But one of the things we had all these potential new members do is fill out a ministry directory to select some areas that they are willing to participate in our church. Because listen, we don't need more people to sit in the seats. We want to give more people an opportunity to serve. Listen, every time I see someone join the life of our church, I do not say, yay, I can now say I pastor a church of such and such number of people. I say, yay, I know that person is really excited about this type of ministry. They're going to be a tremendous asset to us. That's what I see when people come into the life of our church. And I want them to feel that. I want them to feel I have a place here in this place. But it tells us that Joshua and these leaders failed to prepare the next generation. Look at verse 10 again. Verse 10 of Judges 2. So it says, all that generation, that's Joshua and his leaders, all that generation were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. You see, these people were arising as a new generation, and they didn't know anything about God. Now listen, this isn't just a church sermon. This is a family message. This is an understanding that you have an opportunity to pass the torch here in our church, but you have an opportunity to pass the torch in your family. How are you doing to teach your kids or your grandkids, or your nieces, or your nephews, or whatever family relationship I've forgotten, about what God is doing in your life, how God is capable of working. I was just talking to somebody this morning who tomorrow at 11 a.m. is going to find out if their job is gone. And they were saying to me, we've been telling our kids that no matter which way God works on this, we trust God. That's passing the torch. That's letting them know and letting them see the spiritual work that God does even when life is hard. We're not here to tell people, come to Jesus and everything is perfect. Jesus comes in to cover our sins, but the world is still the world. And it's still difficult, and it's still challenging. And listen, if you're going to let the challenges be bigger than God, then you are always going to feel beat up. And you're always going to feel defeated. And that is not what Jesus died for. He died to cover your sins and to give you brand new life and purpose. If you feel beat up, my question to you would be, how often are you going and talking to Jesus? How often are you asking Jesus, what do you want me to do today? What do you want me to know today? And it says here that these people didn't know the Lord. They didn't consider him personally. That's why we prayed over this verse today, Psalm 95:6. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. People need to understand God is personal. He made you. He knows your fingerprints. He knows everything about you, and he loves you, and he wants to work in your life. And the reason that God can't work in some people's lives is not because God is powerless, but because God loves you enough to never force his way in. That's the amazing part about God, that he could force his way in and force you to do anything, but he loves you enough to lovingly challenge you to make that choice. That's his desire for you. And so it says that these people didn't know God. You are not an accident, and you are not an accidental creation. You are an intentional creation of God. He knows you. Before you were ever made, he knew you. He knew the struggle you'd walk into this room right now with. And he's challenging you. Stop trying to do it by yourself. I designed you to have a relationship with me. You know it's not working out by yourself, so why try? And when we pass the torch to people, they understand that we're not calling them to just go off and live Christianity, but please keep it quiet. When I come and ask you how you're doing, just say fine. No, we need to get rid of that mentality. We don't need people to feel uncomfortable. Well, if I say anything more than fine, they might be uncomfortable with that. I'm so glad when people are just honest and say, you know what? Been a bad week. Now listen, you don't have to take 20 minutes to tell it. But you don't have to pretend to be something you're not. Turn to the Lord and turn to one another. Know there are people who care about you. Why didn't Christianity die with the disciples? I mean, how come when Jesus and the disciples died, that wasn't just the end of it? Because they kept passing it along. You got Peter, and Peter's passing it to Barnabas, and Barnabas is passing it to Paul, and Paul's passing it to Timothy, and somewhere down the line, it got passed to you. It's because people are taking up the challenge of, you know what? I'm a part of something. I am passing on the message of the gospel. And so the question becomes this: who are you? Who are you investing yourself in? Who are you passing the torch to, or at least showing them how to hold it? If they're not ready to take it up permanently, maybe you can let them hold it for a moment. Let them know what it feels like. Let them know what it's like. Whether you're a leader in our church or whether you're just a Christian, you can help pass the torch. When Nikki and I first got married, I wasn't a great husband. Years later, I still wasn't a great husband. But we had a couple in our church, Willis and Lorraine. Just a sweet older couple in our church. And they just loved younger people, and it didn't intimidate them at all to come up and talk to us. And Willis sometimes would just come and say, "So, how's married life treating you?" You know, and I would say some sort of something. But he never let it go there. He'd never just be like, "Well, okay." He would ask me things like, "Have you taken Nikki out?" "Taken her out where?" "I took her out to the car and we drove here to church. Isn't that good enough?" I mean, I already put a ring on it. I'm done with all my responsibilities. And Willis would challenge us. I remember they sold us, Willis and Lorraine sold us some furniture. My wife reminded me of the details. They sold us some furniture, and then they gifted the money back to us. I think they just saw it as an opportunity just to talk to us that night. We went over and picked that stuff up. I'm thankful that here in this church, there are some of you seniors who have befriended my kids. My kids talk about that. That's meaningful to them. Don't ever make the excuse, "Well, this person, you know, we're in two different stages of life. They don't want to hear from me. This busy mom, she doesn't want to hear anything I have to say." Don't buy that lie. We've been called to be a church family together. If you see someone that's stressed, don't say, "Oh, they look like they're having a terrible day. Something difficult's going on. I'm going to go that way." Man, what if we took a second and we went over and we talked with somebody? What if we saw that person that is crying in the restaurant? And we walked over and we said, "You know what? I don't know what's going on in your life, but I can tell life is tough. And I just wanted to pray for you. I just want to let you know that people do care. And then most importantly, God cares." What if people saw that coming out of our lives? So I'm just challenging you, make efforts and watch our church flourish. As people know that they can come here not just to be in attendance, but they can come here and be cared for, that is meaningful to people. But also understand this, when people aren't pursuing God, that doesn't mean they're not pursuing or caring about spiritual things. Continue to look at Judges chapter 2. Look at verses 11 and 12. This is speaking of this new generation that's rose up. It says, "And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger." This word "abandoned" comes up a lot. It literally means they intentionally left where they were supposed to be. They abandoned their post. They were called to do something, and they failed to act in the way God had challenged them. We must ensure that we are teaching people not to abandon the Lord. For years, churches have lamented young people who have grown up through the church and left and never come back. Our questions should be these. Instead of, "Why are they so godless?" maybe our challenge should be, "How did we train them for godliness? Did we pass the torch? Did we give them their opportunity? Did we instruct them fully, or did we just talk in religious platitudes? Did we really instruct our children?" We have to make investments when we're young if we want to be able to retire one day. The same way a church must make investments right now, today. No matter how little you've invested yesterday, we have to do it today and say, "Who's going to take my spot? Who's next? Who can I challenge? Who can I encourage? Not just to take my ministry, but who can I encourage? I'm no longer got kids at home, but I know someone who does. How could I help them? How could I encourage them?" It's not because people don't care about God that they abandon him. Sometimes they were just never shown how important it was. Sometimes they were just never truly challenged to live that faith out themselves. So the question is this once again. How are you working for the future of First Baptist Church? Do you realize that to work for the future, it starts today? Do you recognize that you can make an impact today? And I mean, like, even as this service is concluding today, I would bet that there might be some people, as we've been talking, you're thinking, you know what, I'm supposed to be talking to that person. I know that person's hurting. I don't know if other people do. Stop assuming everyone knows everyone's hurts. If you know, what are you doing to help them? What are you doing to encourage them? Maybe some of you realize, you know what? I don't have anyone. I've even let them hold the torch. They don't even know where my torch is. I need to give them a shot. I need to give them their opportunity. It comes down to how are you passing the torch. You know what? In 1948, you had those runners all across England passing the torch to get to London to the Olympics. Guess how many of those runners from 1948 were passing the torch in 2012? Zero. Because they've passed the torch. They've run their race. They've handed it off. We must make sure we're giving people their opportunity. So who are you investing in for faith? Are you spending that time with your kids, with your grandkids, with whoever it is? Are you challenging them? Are you helping them grow? Are you helping families? Are you helping ministry focus? But as important as it is for you to pass the torch, let me ask you this. Are you taking the torch? Has someone offered it to you and you said, well, I can't do that. Or I won't do that. Listen, we need all hands on deck. Everyone that God has called to this church is a piece of the puzzle. We are a puzzle with no edges. There's always room for another piece. Coming in and bringing their unique talents, their unique backgrounds, and their unique abilities into the life of our church. You know what happens when you have fewer runners? You have exhausted runners and unmet goals. I don't want to see that for our church, and I know you don't want to see that for our church. We want to hit what God is calling us to. And let me say this to conclude. Have you abandoned God? Have you known of God? Have you had someone talk to you about God? But you decide that's not where I want to be. And you realize that the place you thought was better has been awful. You thought your sin would make you feel better and good, and it doesn't. It just brings guilt and shame. Listen, God has not abandoned you. Jesus Christ died on the cross so that anyone who recognizes that their sin is a block between them and the Father, Jesus Christ reaches in to remove that sin. All we have to do is ask. He doesn't ask you to clean up your life. He says, I'll clean it up if you'll give your life to me. Today, I don't know where you are, and I don't know how God has challenged you, but I pray that today that you will take up the challenge of God for your faith, for your family, for your church, and for your life. I'm going to invite our praise.